Gail? Yeah. We'll call a subcommittee of the Judiciary Committee to order. It is February 14th, and it's 12 minutes after 4. Present Representative Croft, myself, Bundy, and Porter, members of the subcommittee that were tasked to look at HB 6, HB 3, and the accompanying resolution to see if we could come back with a recommendation to the main body of the Judiciary Committee as to where we ought to go from here. It would be, I guess, my intention to hear from the bill sponsor, Representative Kelly, and then I would, and anybody else would like to weigh in, we'll keep it as informal as we can, and anybody would like to make comments, but it might be that, well, people who want to weigh in when you want. We'll I think, start to mark this up and come up with a finished product between the two basic bills, HB 3 and HB 6, and then you might want to reserve your comments to when you see what the finished product looks like, but if you have comments as we go along, please feel free to weigh in. With that, Representative Kelly.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. There were a number of issues that were brought up in the full Judiciary meeting. I think Representative Porter brought up one that was a valid criticism of the bill, and that was that through the track on our chart over here, through the track of the informal adjudication versus the more formal track of petition to the court, that we were not disclosing at equal points on either of those lot tracks. The resultant outcome would be that you would force more people into the petition process because it was to their advantage to see it through, because there was an advantage. The advantage was that they may not get disclosed if they went on that track. Valid out criticism. I think the department said they would just get overrun and it just wouldn't work. And so we've moved it from, in this an amendment that I have here, if you would consider it, to petition. And I think that addresses it.
Yeah, before we go to the amendment that you're suggesting, so that we're all playing off the same sheet of music here, I have in front of me the CS for House Bill 6, HESS, / K.
Yes. We don't have it.
Yes. I'm sorry. We have a blank CS. It's a good thing I mentioned that. I'm on the wrong page. We have the work draft, Chenoweth 2/12/97 / L.
Right.
Now we're in the.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
So, the amendment, which do you have? I don't know that I've handed these out to you.
No.
Okay. The amendment, which is. L.2.
Okay. We'll just call it amendment number one.
Okay.
For our use here. And if you would walk us through the amendment.
Sure. Page 3, line 12. Delete all material. Where it says the department shall publicly disclose the name of the minor, parents, guardians, etc., and the information contained in the court's dispositional order when the court has adjudicated the minor a delinquent based on, and then it has the criteria. This just says when the department files with the court a petition seeking adjudication of a minor as delinquent, the department shall publicly disclose the name. Giving a general description of the offense, a brief statement of the facts. However, the disclosure under the subsection may not identify or provide information about the victim of the offense committed by the minor. I'm confused here. Just a moment. Oh, but I'm sorry. I just read that wrong. You can't disclose information about the victim, is what that says. So it's just taking the old section out, which said adjudication, and putting in a new subsection, which says petition, which gains us the equality on the two tracks.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Representative Croft.
Explain to me that. It looks like we're moving back up the stream, and why does that make sense again?
Okay. Should I just speak louder, I guess?
Yeah, these will probably move down as well.
Here,
Pete, if you would do the old version and then the new version.
Okay, old version. You have essentially right here, this is where the adjustment begins, right? You've taken the kid to through the investigation, which happens for each, whether you go to petition or an informal adjustment. And then the minor admitting guilt and the consent to outcome, that's just a step to the informal adjustment. That's one. These are just have to occur before you get to an informal adjustment. We're saying under the old amendment or under the old CS that at that point you release the name. That's when he can either, let me see if I can explain. To get to this point, he's got to buy into it. And over here, he's got to say, no, I don't want to. By the way, the department can file a petition on the kid whether he agrees to it or not. I mean, they may decide this is an egregious case. This kid has real problems. We got to set him before a court. But I don't know that display actually shows that these are equal. That to go the informal adjustment really begins about here. The decision to go informal adjustment begins right about here. Preliminary investigation, then you're going to decide, well, let's go the informal adjustment. So it's right here. Preliminary investigation, let's go to file petition. It's right here. This can happen because the department wants it and the minor wants it. This can happen either because the department wants it or the minor wants it. So the fear was, informal adjustment is a good thing. We want that because we don't want to be piling up the courts with all these cases that don't necessarily need to be there. The diversion philosophy is in full play here with your informal adjustment. So what we don't want is for everybody to be saying, well, down here at adjudication, which is what the old bill said, down here I'm going to take my chances of going to adjudication. Because if I fight you, if I get an attorney and fight you, I may, you know, somewhere along this step, get thrown out or whatever, and then my name is intact. I'm not explaining this very well.
Pete, can I interrupt a second?
Please do.
In the old way, there was a incentive to go to petition and plug up the courts, because if you went to adjustment, your name was released. If you go to petition, your name's not released. So what this amendment does, if I understand correctly, is to allow for equal treatment. If you go to adjustment, your name is released. If you go to petition, your name's released.
If you go to petition, your name's released. Under the old system, it wouldn't trigger on petition. The court would actually have to find you guilty. And I guess I don't see what's wrong with that. I mean, if the petition process leads to a court, the things that fall out between petition and adjudication are in some cases ones that we want to fall out. If the court process determines that there's something wrong, that that's the wrong kid or it's not guilt, why does moving up the process help us?
I guess the thought here is that you have throughout this process that same thing happening, that they through the they're going to find that he isn't necessarily, things are going to fall out, as you say.
Excuse me, Pete, Brian wanted to weigh in.
Well, go ahead and finish.
And that's all I was going to say is you kind of have similar tracks here, because on this side and this side, things are going to fall out. But what we're saying is that Minor's been charged. He goes to petition. If he goes to petition, I'm beginning to over-explain it, and I don't think I'm doing any better. Maybe Brian, do you have a question?
Well, I think it might be helpful to remember, or perhaps not remember, but to realize where we started from. And this was probably last year, so it's kind of unfair for you to remember that. But I guess the first position that was stated in terms of releasing juveniles' names was let's release juveniles' names the same way that we release adults' names. Let's just totally take away this confidential protection and let them recognize that they and their families are exposed, can be exposed to public announcement of their being charged with a crime, just like an adult is. I mean, if we get busted for something, the only person that has established probable cause is the cop, and it's the front page. You know. So that's where we started. So now we're moving into, well, okay, maybe there's some exceptions, maybe there's some other, maybe the system works a little differently. And because these two paths exist, it does operate differently. Although there are diversion programs and available to the prosecutors, not many of them work much anymore, but there used to be. But in any event, one of the considerations was that let's not, for this bill, let's not make this release until there's at least confirmation by somebody else that probable cause exists. Really, the steps where he's now, I think, with this amendment, suggesting that this information be released, albeit under limited circumstances that is reflected in the bill, is after probable cause is established. But in the one hand, it will be established, and within a very short period of time, an informal adjustment will occur. Problem is, in the other track, it may not be a short period of time from the establishment of probable cause, which they do during the preliminary investigation before they file a petition. But between the filing of the petition and the court case for the juvenile, as you remember the example of the Fairbanks case where the trooper was shot, that can be a long time. And some thinking, at least, is that it would be appropriate to release that information prior to that.
And I guess I understand.
Representative Croft.
Thank you. I apologize, Mr. Chairman. Understand those points, even though I wasn't around when they were argued. And we release, as you said, adult records from arrest all the way through. And my conclusion after hearing a lot of testimony on it was that I'm willing to go to juveniles at conviction, but was very uncomfortable with juveniles at arrest. And now we're talking about the time between the two and where along that line might it be appropriate. And that's why I asked the question. And Representative Kelly, you and I had an interesting discussion on the problem in adjustment being that sometimes you worry the department doesn't do its job, and I think the child in Fairbanks was through a lot of in adjustment circles where it probably should have, a petition maybe should have been filed.
I think he was awaiting court, though. Excuse me? He was awaiting a court hearing.
He'd been petitioned but hadn't been tried, yeah. I think.
Finally got his petition? My knowledge was that there was a date, not
competitive. I'm needing to back up just a little bit because you reminded me something, Representative Croft. I think we've moved forward with the assumption that between treating totally as adult and treating totally as children, we want something in the middle for juveniles, particularly repeat of offenders or serious offenders. And with that in mind, I think, let me check with the committee, that we prefer something, some version of HB 6 over HB 3 that has the release at arrest. Is that a fair?
Well, I wouldn't mind HB 3 standing on its own merits and being voted up or down, but I think there may be more logic in trying to get this bill crafted the way we finally want it.
That does summarize my, your statement does summarize my feeling.
Okay, so we are moving towards 6, not excluding 3, but the vehicle that will be bringing a report back next week will be a marked up version of HB 6 at this point.
Can I make a comment on what Representative Croft brought up? When you said that you would wish that a conviction, we go through the process and things fall out, and if you're talking about a punishment, I would agree with you completely. You should not sentence someone before they are convicted. I guess that goes to the fact that I look at it less of disclosure, less as a punishment and more as for public safety. And I guess that's where I kind of arrive at that.
Okay, now, if I might, I don't disagree that we want to release the names. Somebody where probable cause has been established, I would accept releasing the names either for someone who's heading for adjustment or heading for petition. What I need to know is how does this amendment achieve that?
The amendment, we have one section that talks about adjustment in the front of the
section. Be two, section three.
It's a section four. Previous to the, to this new item.
Section four is adjustment, and section
315A.
Part A.
B is okay.
Page three talks about adjudication.
Okay, I understand.
We're taking B totally out and replacing it with this.
With the new section B that addresses petition.
Yeah.
Okay. So a juvenile who falls under this scope of these more narrowly defined serious crimes and was found to have probable cause, if we adopt this amendment, then the would no longer be under the confidentiality, both if they were headed toward adjustment and if they're headed toward petition.
Correct.
You're looking like you have a question, Representative Crow.
I do. We've also, in taking out an entire page, changed the enumeration of, eliminated really the enumeration of crimes and simply made it for whatever reason the petition is filed.
That should not be.
No.
That would be certainly counter to what the intent was.
So that's what you did.
Oh, what? Because by deleting all material and inserting section B, B needed to be page line 3 through 12.
Page 3.
Line
12.
Through page 4, line 10.
Line 10.
Yes.
It's got a lot of enumerated.
Right. I'm sorry, it should be through page 3, line 15.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, if that's the case, then I got another problem.
What's that?
We'll discuss the 16.
If I may, then with that.
Conceptual.
This has become, conceptual.
I don't know if this could be a friendly amendment to the amendment or what, but probably not. But I guess let's vote on that amendment then, and I'll get into the other problem.
Conceptual amendment, Mr. Chairman?
We'll do what the sponsor wants, but I view this as kind of a working group, and we'll work up a document. Maybe you'd want to present that as a CS. I think that would be cleaner than us coming back with a number of amendments.
It's fine with me.
Oh, okay. Well, Mr. Chairman, if I may, then, I would have no objection to the amendment as newly defined to be page 3, line 12 through page 3, line 15. But I would personally say for consistency that line 16 should omit the language referring to a specific age, because there isn't that requirement in the previous A section that deals with the adjusted cases.
Representative Kelly.
That?
No. A section does not include, if I may, for the record, my name is Bruce Campbell. In Part B, we're dealing with any felony at petition that the department has felt so serious as to go to a petition process. And in Part A, back here, where we're doing adjudication, we're not including all felonies. We're only including a narrow list of felonies.
Crimes against persons, et cetera.
Adjustment. In adjustment, we're going just the narrower list of felonies that we would release information on. On Part B, where it was more serious and they've actually gone to petition or gone through the court process, we're including all felonies, which includes such things as
okay,
the fraud, et cetera. We talked about that just before the meeting.
So actually, you're adding some to this.
Yes, it's an addition, but then when you start talking all felonies, including forgery or fraud or I can't go through the list. I'm sorry, but you're starting to recognize that it may take someone 16 to understand that it's even a felony, or what it is they're doing, or to be.
All right, no, I was in error. I thought 16 referred to this entire list. That's just an additional provision of felonies not otherwise covered in this total litany. So yeah, fine.
And never mind. And again, just for clarification of the committee. Someone under the age of 16 who commits a crime against a person, whether they're adjusted or petitioned, that information would be released.
Disclosed, correct.
Okay. Representative Croft, are you
smacking, or do I have a question?
Are you seeing where we're going?
I am seeing where you're going. Don't have a question yet.
Remember, I know your mother. You could get in trouble at any time. You had an interesting comment earlier. His mother works for the university. His dad's on the Regents. His mother's asking him to write a strong letter to his dad. Sorry, I'm revealing telling tales out of school, as it were. Okay. to do this a step at a time, we now are recommending that you have a CS that includes what I've called Amendment Number 1. I say we because... Representative Porter and I agree with that. Representative Croft.
Well, let me ask a couple of questions about that then. What determinations are made before a petition is filed? The reason that you feel that a broader scope can be given to this is because somebody in the department has alleged that this person should be determined delinquent.
Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, Mr. Russ, what's
his last name? Webb.
Yes, Mr. Webb, welcome. And the question is, at preliminary investigation, what determination occurs to decide, I guess, either way, but particularly that petition be filed?
A number of factors come into play, and it's been, unfortunately, about 20 years since I did this work specifically, but I'll try to remember what I remember from that time. Generally, it'd be based on a seriousness of offense.
Can I interrupt a second? But the very first decision would be probable cause.
Well, you'd have to know that the elements of the crime were there, that in fact the evidence indicated that this individual had indeed committed the crime alleged, and that the elements of the offense were such as had been alleged in the arrest report, so that you knew that the referred charge was in fact a correct charge, and you had all the elements to indicate that in fact this had occurred or probably occurred.
And then I interrupted, and then there is another litany that takes place deciding which path
to go. Correct.
Which
a number of factors, not all of which I'll be able to recall, but obviously the seriousness of the offense, any history that you have in terms of the minor, if he or she has a past history of delinquent behavior, the willingness of the minor to accept responsibility and to accept responsibility and consequences, to be accountable essentially for the act, or if there's just an absolute denial, certainly then you can't proceed in an informal manner if the child simply denies and the facts are there and you need to take some action. So really it's the nature of the offense, the seriousness, the history that the child may have, and their willingness and the willingness of the family, and the ability that you have to deal effectively through whichever process. In other words, if a child for rehabilitative purposes needs something that you cannot provide in an informal manner, then you would go a more formal route. Those are generally
ever filed a petition that the court found unsubstantiated?
Yes. Petitions, yes, there are. Not every petition that is filed is adjudicated as a finding the court might enter that the child, in fact, had committed the offense alleged.
In some cases, the child's denial is because they didn't do it. And so, folding it into what Representative Kelly was saying, the balance that we're drawing here, if we were just punishing him, it'd all be under a punishment, restitution, rehabilitation, placement, and notification. But we're worried about telling everybody who this child is between petition and a determination by a court of guilt, and we're balancing the destruction to that child of a wrongful publication against the possibility that the public will be harmed by that child in the interim. Oh, fair statement, Mr. Kelly.
Fair statement. There is one element I think that you need to consider, too, is that the innocence of that child would also be a public document.
Is there any that's a good point. Is there any mechanism for us to publish that? I mean, is there any? Have you ever considered we screwed up and this child's not the one?
My original suggestion was the electronic notification, which essentially for cost savings, just ease. That you'd have a web page set up. And the activity on those cases were just published on the web page. Then rather than having a countertop where people come in and you have to hire people to keep files and things like that, interested parties can just dial up on the web page and see what's happened. And I would hope that it would be structured in such a manner that you'd have the name of the person that is currently being adjudicated, and then as time went by, guilty or innocent, like that.
Can I just continue on? In the Judiciary Committee, we talked about the fact that there are certain categories that they can already disclose to schools when public health is threatened, public safety, I think the term used in the statute. Why are those not sufficient now? I know you clearly believe they're not. I may even agree with you, but can you articulate for me why they're not?
For one thing, there isn't a very good definition of public threat or public danger. It's poorly defined. I honestly don't know if there has been a case law that's evolved over that is the reason, or if it is just poorly defined in statute. I honestly don't know. I know that I've never found a good definition in statute in this section dealing with schools. In HB 387 last year, we tried to define continued criminal activity was represented a threat to the child and others. That language did not cross over to the promised land, though. No, but that it was. We were kind of grappling with that at the time. This whole definition of what is a danger. I don't think it's well defined. In the school system, you have a breakdown in the communication. The way the statutes are written, that you may notify the schools. And then it gets notified to the school, and there it sits on the principal's desk, and he's decided that confidentiality restricts him from then telling his teachers and the janitor and the other kids, well, the other kids, but the teachers and the janitors and the counselor, because he's entrusted with that knowledge and they can't, so then it goes that far. So there's been a real breakdown in that system. And I think Representative Green is really interested in addressing that portion of it, the school portion of it. But I guess that's my problem, is that there isn't a good enough disclosure.
Brian may have some insights as well.
Well, I think that with the added constitutional rights, if you will, and concern for victims in the community, and the Constitution being changed to the overall mission of corrections now, the first thing is community protection as opposed to rehabilitation has been changed. I think this is somewhat consistent with that whole premise. I guess, while I understand the significance of someone being found not guilty and then trying to put the whatever that nice analogy.
Genie back in the bottle.
Yeah, that one.
It's Friday.
In any
My
event.
Apologies for a subcommittee meeting on Friday.
The charge is on page one, and the fact that you're found not guilty is on page 25, and 6 days later, so a very small print. Recognizing all of that, I would ask if it's changed in the last 10 years that the amount of kids, as compared to everybody that comes in that front door, who ultimately go through the petition process and are found not guilty, is that a very significant number?
I don't honestly know if it's changed over time. I think there's a earlier today looked, and there was a relatively significant number. I think better than 10% or more, probably closer to 15 if I remember correctly. I'm trying to work the numbers in my head as I speak here, but it was a significant number when I looked at it.
May I ask a question?
Yeah. And obviously our challenge, whatever we do here, is to try to balance this and hope that the law of unintended consequences we heard about earlier, that whatever we do helps more people than it hinders. And you know, the difference between 80 and 90% and 10 and 15% is pretty overwhelming when we talk about victims.
Even with that, if I could follow up, are you saying that they actually went through adjudication and were found not guilty, or the case was dismissed after filing petition, whether it was...
There are several stages.
Yeah.
The number I'm trying to recall is the adjudications, you know, the dismissals by the court through the formal adjudicatory process.
I'd be very surprised if that number was as a result of actual adjudication process, which, if it were an adult, is a trial, and a determination after a presentation of evidence that there was a finding of not guilty. I think one of the major steps between the filing of the petition and the adjudication itself is a review by the Department of Law. I wouldn't care, and I don't imagine the sponsor would mind if we changed that point of disclosure to after review by the Department of Law.
Well, I don't know yet, and I'm not trying to be dilatory, but I'm trying to understand, given that we're making that balance based on public safety, how many kids are, if not exonerated, at least the charges are dismissed, versus how many kids during that period commit some kind of crime. So I can get an idea of what the public safety risk is and what the detriment to kids is. So even if they're not found innocent, if somewhere between 10 and 15% there's no formal adjudication but there was a petition, do we have any figures on how many kids are committing crimes that harm the public safety, maybe that's redundant, crimes between petition and adjudication?
Mr. Chairman, I had a question. I don't necessarily have that answer for you, but I did have a question that relates to that.
I'm feeling a need to get a little more focused here. Let's assume we're going to see some version of HB 6 back in judiciary, and then whether we can argue the merits of the bill. Right now, what we're trying to do is get a version of HB 6 before the committee, and then we can argue the merits of the bill after it's there.
Quite right, and you were going to move an amendment that moved it from adjudication petition, and I got to know whether to vote against it or oppose it or not. I mean, so that's the very thing.
Okay.
I'm trying to concentrate on is that distinction.
Can I ask a question? I think Russell will know this, and that was, I thought, and I correct me if I'm wrong, but that the Department of Law actually gets involved in the petition process, the before petition.
If I may, Mr. Chairman, the Department of Law, unless things have changed, is involved in the petition process, but that is where the determination of probable cause, if you will, by DFYS is confirmed by the Department of Law. They make the final decision on whether or not the juvenile is going to go on to trial, or they're going to say, we don't have enough, and it's dismissed. And at that stage, this dismissal may not be as a result of him not doing it, or a determination by the court, just the normal prosecutorial discretion of saying, we don't have enough to prove it, or there's not enough probable cause. It's hard to say which one of those two, but
I think in order to be able to answer this question, and I need to shut down at 5, and we need to hear from someone from the Department of Law to be able to answer this question. I'd like to know, at what point does the Department of Law make this review? Does it happen shortly after you file a petition, or do we have a year's lag? Because there is such a lag between actually going to court, if you will, and filing the petition in many cases. And then DFYS, somebody who can tell us what's the number of folks who actually go through the petition process and I never make it to a formal adjudication, what's the percentage there? And then after formal adjudication, what's the percentage found not guilty? Then some information about a recidivism rate for those people that are in the petition process.
Entirely proper way to handle it, I think. And we won't get that in 10 minutes.
No, we need to hear it. So obviously we're going to meet again on Monday or Tuesday, and we'll set up some kind of meeting there. But then let's go on to other issues that we need answers to as far as questions. We've taken care of Representative Porter's concern about age 16.
Mm-hmm.
Representative Croft, do you have other questions that need to be asked?
I have some more on the specifics of the crimes. Maybe we can wait till Monday. I did want to we talked this morning about expunging of the records after 5 years. Are you going to propose language, or should we on that concept?
I guess I could propose that.
It's either way. We had some drafted up, but I'm not sure I'd like.
Oh,
you gave up on it?
We've been having time
okay.
drafting.
Well, then we'll take a stab at it. And I mentioned to you.
Well, excuse me, Ms. As long as we're going to get a CS, let's get a clean one and try to avoid the amending at the table process.
Is there some draft language you have that would move on into drafting?
We had some done, but in looking at it here, I'm not sure I like it. So we're having the same problem you did. So I don't have any now.
Well,
we'll work with you.
Representative Porter, yeah. You deal with that issue before our next meeting.
I apologize for missing the meeting this morning, but the five-year expungement, I presume, is if no previous or no similar offenses or no offenses. Or 5 years.
No other offenses and no violation of whatever conditions they were put under was the things we were thinking about.
But would not, if I may, the wording I think would want to be checked so that it would not preclude the ability of a court, that the ability that the court has now to utilize that in subsequent hearings.
In sentencing particularly, or? Okay.
Okay, does that take care of that issue? And I recognize some drafting problem here. Sometimes we can't get there from here, and have to give it up as evidenced by skateboards. But would you please work with the sponsor
I'll make the same commitment I made this morning on the record, and that was that if it isn't, and because of the drafting problem, if it isn't in judiciary, I would hope that you could bear with me, and then I'll just make a commitment to you that address that issue if at all possible. And I got to believe there's an answer to this.
Sure. Okay. Other questions? You had some questions about the offenses. I think perhaps you ought to ask those so that they could be answered when we meet again.
Great. I had a question about fourth degree assault. You list assault here. Or at least it's a fourth degree felony against the person, and it may be of such a stature that we don't want to consider it. First, second, and third degree being certain aggravated of assault, and it being the barest form of a slap in effect.
Representative Croft, I would either look to take that out or maybe just modify it a bit, and that would be causing serious injury, which we have a definition of what serious injury is in the statutes, And using a, instead of a dangerous instrument, it's a dangerous weapon, right? Would that...
That's one of the gradations, and I think it's one that goes from fourth to third.
It does? Okay, then let's just take it out. If the committee doesn't mind,
Let's check that out.
Just call it third-degree assault.
And that'll be part of what we come back to you with. We'll research that and make sure that's the case.
I like the distinction that you make between simple possession of controlled substances and manufacture or distribution. The only troublesome thing I've found in the law is manufacture a pot plant is technically the manufacture of a controlled substance if it's alive. It gets to be an odd quirk of the federal law, and I've seen where it triggers all kinds of very harsh, meant for manufacturing rather than a plant. So I don't know how to handle that now. It's just a question I had. And I guess the if you're looking at those two, that would be great. The third issue is right as we left the subcommittee, I asked you about the possibility of an escape hatch. That is, I know you're nervous about unfettered discretion in the department. Certainly unfettered discretion to decide to disclose is unacceptable to you. But so when we do this list, if there be some escape hatch of this technically fits under the definition of a crime, but there's we can tell from the situation that it's really not one that we should. And I have just a proposal on that I would like you to consider. We don't have to discuss it now, but we can look at it then in more depth on Monday. I tried to make certain specific criteria rather than just if you don't want to, you don't have to, about what and tried to map onto some of the other factors that you used. And I kind of a continuing concern about releasing the names of the parents. I think those are the issues that
and there's I'll disagree with the parents because I think sometimes that's some of the most pressure you can put on a young person, but and anecdotally across that in the past, but we had a question that I mentioned to you earlier, I believe, about foster parents.
Yes,
and I think perhaps we ought to look into addressing that in the CS.
Yeah. And Brian, do you remember, was there a specific place that you saw in here that could be?
Well, under where you're listing parents.
Just parents, yeah. Except, yeah, okay. On line 16, page 2, and then the corresponding.
Right. Yeah.
Okay.
If you could
address foster parents.
Parents, guardian.
Not to include foster parents would be fine with me.
And I'm not sure that maybe you want to research that a little bit further and say temporary foster parents.
Yeah.
Because someone who adopts a child at infancy is a foster parent.
I'm glad you caught that because I think it's a good point. Yeah.
And you would like to, you guys would like to disclose a permanent foster parent. It's the temporary kind that you don't feel you can make the inference of bad parent on.
Permanent foster parent is, for all intents and purposes, a parent.
And I'm not even sure that releasing the information that I'd agree that the inference is that there have been bad parents. It's just that this is a cohesive unit, and if I'm going to protect the public, we need to know not only this child's name, but where the child's apt to be, parents, that sort of thing. And I
could be motivation for the juvenile not to mess up if it's a foster parent.
And we can debate whether juveniles will use that as a weapon against parents or whether parents will really feel greater inclination, whether bad parents would become better because their name becomes public.
Also, just I'd like to lay something before the committee and just have you think about it in the interim, kind of a direction that I was thinking of going after our meeting this morning and addressing some of the concerns of the that the administration had. I think they view this bill as having holes in the net that are maybe a little too small. I think you're looking at addressing those and with some of the criteria that you've put forth here. I think we should look at that. The other thing I was thinking of is in the Part B, where is it? Part B, again, page 3, line 12. Actually, page 3, line 16. because at this point we're disclosing felonies, which in some cases could be...
Where are you again? I'm sorry.
Page 3, line 16. When we're talking about commission of a felony, I think in repeated discussions over this bill, people are concerned about what I call the what-if scenarios. You got some kid that writes a bad check or something like that. Maybe that's a poor example, but some of the felonies that these kids are getting involved in aren't life-threatening or represent a, you know, a clear danger to the public. And I thought what we might put in there on line 16 is the minor's alleged commission of a repeat felony. And on just those kinds of felonies, there's still with the crimes against person, the burglary, the arson, the distribution of child pornography, all those kinds of dangerous things. That's just, we got to know about those kids and protect the public. But maybe on some of these other ones, I wouldn't mind, leave it up to the committee completely, but I would just put that we might want to look on those felonies associated with the shot at.
Okay. Unfortunately, run out of time. I will have my people check with your people, and would like we need them to meet either Monday or Tuesday. I would like to have a report back to the judiciary by Wednesday. So a marked up of what we've agreed on so far, CS.
Okay. Do you, and if I guess if it were Tuesday, we could probably have a CS.
Maybe we better wait on the CS because we don't need to kill any more trees and any more drafters.
Okay.
If we could meet Monday, maybe we could complete this and we could have a CS for Wednesday then.
Okay.
Let's do what we can early or late, but meet Monday.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
You guys are going to be in town all three, so.
Yeah, I'm leaving for the weekend. It's weather permitting, I'll be back Sunday night. But
we may have to go.